Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Welcome back to The Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. This week, we'll be talking about the continuing danger of nuclear weapons with my friend, who is an anti-nuke activist, Leonard Iger. Leonard coordinates media and outreach for Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action up in Washington State. Since retiring from a career as an occupational and environmental health professional, Leonard has devoted much of his time to the abolition of nuclear weapons. He initiated the No to New Trident campaign to stop production of the Navy's new fleet of ballistic missile submarines, and Leonard maintains a blog, The Nuclear Abolitionist, to educate and engage people to work for a nuclear weapons-free world. If you go to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, you can get the links to all of those things that Leonard is involved in. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Leonard Iger. Leonard Iger, welcome to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Thank you. This is wonderful, a real privilege to be aboard.
Well, tell my listeners a little bit about yourself, and then we'll talk about the Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action.
Ooh, about myself. Well, yeah. In brief, I'm a retired public health professional. I worked in occupational environmental health in my professional career, and that, my graduate training, which included the study of radiological health, the effects of radiation on people. And I had vivid memories from that, these visual memories, even though it was all numbers and statistics, but it was about people and the effects of radiation on humans. And everything I was learning in graduate school was about the effects of Hiroshima and Nagasaki on the victims,
right.
Those who survived. And so that stayed with me. And so, you know, I was working in the 1980s, and here we are now, 2016, for the last decade. After working in social justice work for a long time, I decided to devote myself to one singular goal, and that is abolishing nuclear weapons from the face of the earth. I realized there weren't enough people doing that. You know, it's not pretty work. It's not the popular cause out there, and but it is good work. And so, been working with Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action, and really enjoying my work, meeting wonderful people, and doing what we have to do. So that's
Leonard,
kind of a brief sense.
Leonard, before we talk about the Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action, a place that I've visited before, it's very lovely and peaceful and has a really great energy, I think, and that's in a big part to your presence there and your influence on it. But you said that working against nuclear weapons is not popular. There's not a lot of people doing it anymore. But my very first foray into activism was supporting the anti-nuke, whether it was nuclear power plants or nuclear weapons. I think it was back in like the early 80s. It seemed to be like a vibrant movement. Why do you think that it has diminished now? Was it the end of the Cold War? Do people mistakenly think that there's no danger of nuclear annihilation anymore?
Yes. Well, it is complex, but I think in large part it is what people thought was the peace dividend at the end of the Cold War. People just made an assumption, I think, by and large, that the Cold War is over, we have nothing to fear anymore, all the weapons have gone away, and we can go on business as usual. And yet, the weapons did not go away, and although people will cite the statistics that at the height of the Cold War, and especially in the 80s when there were somewhere in the range of between 50 and 60,000, depending on the exact year, nuclear warheads out there. And now there are a fraction of that, probably 15,000 roughly, of all the nuclear-armed nations. The weapons that are left, the warheads left, are the most deadly of all. Mm-hmm. And the U.S. and Russia have most of those weapons. But to stay on your question, people, it's been out of people's minds. And there's also been a mindset historically, especially during the Cold War, nuclear weapons were the unspeakable. People did not even talk about them. It was not something that people wanted to think with and yet about, and yet we lived under that shadow. And so even today, it's one of those things, for those that do know they're out there and that they are a danger, it's something they can't bring themselves to approach. It's so unthinkable, so horrific, and it instills such fear that people choose not to deal with it, I believe. It's a very large part. And the government likes that. I believe the U.S. government, the reason that the naval base gets that hangar where Ground Zero has property next door, the reason that's behind a very modest chain link and barbed wire fence and hidden away well deep high conifers in the beautiful Pacific Northwest is that they want it out of sight and also out of mind so that they continue to deploy those weapons and to modernize them and just go on, again, business as usual, as if it were the Cold War.
Well, you point out in the press release that you sent me,
yes,
that the U.S. is spending more on its nuclear arsenal today than it did during the Cold War. Is that in real dollars or is that in comparable dollars?
You know, in terms of real or comparable, forgive me, I'm not positive. Uh-huh. I do know that in total dollars that are to be spent over the next 30 years, in today's dollars, I understand that the U.S. government is going to spend $1 trillion on the modernization of U.S. nuclear weapons systems. That includes the submarines, the ballistic missile submarines, bombers, land-based missiles, warhead refurbishment, as they call it, or replacement, and possibly a new cruise missile, which is a missile that can be launched from under the wings of bombers. And, of course, the whole infrastructure that supports the weapons, not just the military bases, but also Los Alamos laboratories and all of the facilities that research, develop, and manufacture the weapons. So it's a huge, expansive nuclear weapons complex. And, you know, the irony is that the Cold War ended, and that was the time that we should have ramped back, and we did not. And I can speak in terms of Trident, the Trident nuclear weapon system, that we kept our submarines out on patrol, on alert status, this entire time, not at Cold War levels, but still significant patrols. And we've also moved, since the end of the Cold War, more of the submarines from the Atlantic side to the Pacific side. So now, as it said in the news release, there are 8 Trident subs based Bangor on the Pacific coast during Washington, and the other 6 are at Kings Bay, Georgia, on the Atlantic coast. And that's part of the pivot to Asia, the Asia-Pacific pivot. And ironically, even though that's because of China principally, it still threatens Russia.
So we're
doing it from both coasts. And so we're developing a new arms race. A new Cold War is brewing, and it just can spiral out of control if we continue leading the way, which it seems that we are. Russia and China are both responding. China has been developing its own ballistic missile submarine force and deploying those submarines, and of course Russia has also been building new ballistic missile submarines and developing a new missile, and it just goes on and on. And no one is sitting down and saying, why are we doing this? Why don't we negotiate an end to this? for instance, President Obama and President Putin, the two powers that need to lead the way to disarmament since they have the lion's share of nuclear weapons.
Yeah, it's still so scary. And, you know, nobody's sitting down and saying that because it seems to be super profitable.
Yes, it is very profitable. Interestingly enough, from my area of expertise with Trident, the Trident weapon system is one of the triad, as the government calls it. There are three legs of the nuclear triad, the submarines, ballistic missile submarines, the land-based missiles, or ICBMs, spread around the United States, and then, of course, the bombers that drop gravity bombs, or could also fire the cruise missiles. So there are those three legs, and by far, and this has been stated in official government documents, that the Trident submarines represent the most survivable leg of that nuclear triad. And so I like to call it, it's the crown jewel of the government's nuclear weapons programs. If they had to give up two out of three programs, it would not be the Trident submarines. And they're currently planning, the government is planning, and in research and development, to build a new generation of submarines, because the older submarines are aging and will have to be retired over the next few decades. And so they're going to build 12 new ballistic missile submarines at a cost of approximately $100 billion. It's a huge cost, and it's also a question of, do we want to keep up this arms race, this nuclear submarine arms race? But it is profitable, and the company that will be the principal contractor for the new boat, speaking of profits, is General Dynamics Electric Boat. And out there on the East Coast, you know, boat building is big, and Electric Boat is a huge contractor with the government, building not just the ballistic missile submarines, but also attack submarines, along with another major shipyard. But it's huge profits, and the members of Congress in those districts are speaking out for this and supporting it because it's bringing quote-unquote jobs and revenue to their districts. And so it is about money. It's a whole political process, and there's a huge defense lobby, which you're very well familiar with, and General Dynamics and all of these associated contractors that build the systems for this new submarine are deeply, deeply invested in their lobbying efforts, and they're reaping huge rewards, no matter what the consequences, no matter how these submarines might one day be used, God forbid. They are looking at immediate profits, and they're going to keep that revenue stream going.
There's not one congressional district in this country that doesn't have a military profiteer in it. It's very insidious.
That is correct. That is correct.
Or a military base, or any kind of military researching. Every university gets a lot of money from the Pentagon to do research. It's just so insidious. It's just completely disgusting.
It is really a difficult one. Sometime back in researching the Defense Department contracts, it went right down to Krispy Kreme donuts, ironically. Everyone, there's practically not any decent-sized company from Coca-Cola and Federal Express and Microsoft that you can almost name any company that has some DOD contract. Of course, there you have it. It is like these tentacles, this cancer, if you will, that is spread. It's metastasized throughout our whole economy. And so to ramp back, to change that is very difficult. Right in Kitsap County, there the naval base Bangor is part of a larger naval operations there with Bremerton, the large shipyard in Bremerton, which actually is where they decommissioned the nuclear reactors from the submarines and other ships. It's huge, and the employment there is in the tens of thousands. So there has to be a real paradigm shift to be able to say, you know, we need to make this shift from spending on war, especially something like nuclear weapons, which are not about fighting a war, but they're about the end.
Right.
You don't fight a war, you annihilate each other and everyone else that's involved. That's a whole other conversation. And so how do we make that shift? And ironically, there are parts of the country where, going back some years, they decommissioned military bases and local communities came together and they created alternative forms of employment, and they re-stimulated their local economies, and it worked from the West Coast to the East Coast. And, you know, my dream is that one day we'll be able to have a binding nuclear arms convention, and the U.S. and Russia will lead the way on that, and, you know, someday we'll see Naval Base Kitsap Banger being converted into a research and development park for alternative energy parts of a new and sustainable life-giving economy. And, you know, it's not a pipe dream, and it's, I don't think it's as naive as it sounds up front to many people. I think it's very practical when we look at the challenges of climate change and so many other challenges that we face.
I live literally next door to one of the biggest Air Force bases in the world, Travis Air Force Base, and I just really, there's so much we could do, you know, as communities that surround Travis, you know, there's so much we could do that could, you know, benefit society with that thing out there.
Yes, yes. Well, it's interesting because next week, I believe it is, some of the folks from Ground Zero Center will be leafleting at the Banger base, at the gate, the entrance gate, where employees will be coming and going, mostly entering early in the morning. And the leaflet they're using for this month is titled, "What Does National Security Mean to You?" And what you just said really brings to mind, you know, that whole question. There are two concepts that kind of keep leading us into more and more nuclear modernization. One is strategic nuclear deterrence, that we have to have this deterrent to defend ourselves, protect ourselves and our allies. And then also the phrase of national security, always citing national security. And I keep thinking, well, wait a minute, what is national security as opposed to insecurity, when there are an increasing number of American families struggling with bills, with rent and medicine and education, and, you know, just so many needs that we have, with homelessness and hunger and infrastructure that's falling apart in our healthcare system as well as our education system, students incurring huge debt. There's so many levels of this that are making our nation more insecure, I believe, and so do many others, I think. And here we are spending so much, not just on the military in general, but on nuclear weapons, which are absolutely antithetical to life. You know, they can only be used for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the countless billions of people that would die directly and indirectly, you know, from nuclear war, it's just madness to even keep going down this road. And yet, even with President Obama's rhetoric, we keep spending money on that instead of really thinking about what is true national security. You know, where is diplomacy and that? But as you said, you know, there's Travis Air Force Base and dozens and dozens of other military installations in this country and what they represent. And
hundreds.
You know,
hundreds and hundreds. Yeah, and not only do we have an Air Force Base, we have two prisons in Vacaville, too. So our economy is based on just oppression. And it's just so And so it's not just a mindset of the people in power, it's a mindset of our neighbors, really, that we have to deal with. Well, Leonard, let's talk, tell us about the Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action, and then let's talk about the controversial ad that's being placed on Seattle buses.
Of course, of course. Ground Zero, in brief, was founded in 1977. And a very short story that really underpins that, there was an engineer working on the new reentry vehicle, which is the device that sits atop a missile and contains the warhead and guides that warhead down to its target. And his name is Bob Aldrich. And Bob was working at that time for Lockheed Martin, and he realized, he had an epiphany, and he realized that he was not developing just a second strike weapon, which is what the government refers to the Trident missile on the submarines as a weapon that would be used if another country, the Soviet Union in those days, were to fire nuclear missiles at us, we would fire a counterattack, a second strike. Well, he realized that the very nature of this weapon, because of its accuracy and a number of other factors, made it potentially a first strike weapon. Where we, if we were even threatened, thinking that the Soviets might attack us, we could fire a first strike and wipe out their silos before they could strike at us. So he went to Jim Douglas. And from there, Jim Douglas was an educator and peace activist. And Jim and Shelley, Shelley, his wife, they were up in Canada, came down to the area surrounding Naval Base Kitsap Hangar, found a piece of property and began a presence there of leafleting and trying to become part of the community. And ultimately, that led to protests where people actually sat down and blocked the trains, what were called the white trains that brought in the nuclear warheads and the rocket motors. And you mentioned about the 80s, a time where there were millions of people at one time in the 80s demonstrating against nuclear weapons. And so in the 70s and 80s, there were thousands of people that demonstrated against nuclear weapons at the Bangor Trident base. And many of them, hundreds at that time, were arrested. Interestingly enough, even the Seattle, the Catholic Archbishop, Hunthausen, stood with the protesters there and actually withheld part of his federal taxes in protest of our nation's, you know, continuing involvement in an arms race. And he's known for his comment calling the naval base Kitsap Hangar the Auschwitz of Puget Sound, which sounds extreme, but in a very real sense, he called them flying ovens. They were only for one thing, just mass annihilation. So right. Ground Zero is,
What? I just said right. Go ahead.
Yes. So Ground Zero has been around since that time. And essentially, it offers people the opportunity to explore the roots of violence and injustice in our world and to experience the power of love through nonviolent action, nonviolent direct action. So basically focusing on Trident, but of course working to abolish all nuclear weapons. We come together regularly, at a minimum of three times a year, for nonviolent direct actions at the Bangor base, nonviolence training, and a host of things that we try to do together. We invite people to come join us, and we engage in nonviolent resistance to Trident. And it's been going on all these years, and we continue that work. And then, of course, every now and then we try something new and creative, and you mentioned the bus ad. And one of our members at one point, Rodney Brunel, came up with the idea of doing an ad on the side of the Seattle City buses, the Seattle Metro Transit buses, that would bring attention to the issue of nuclear weapons right here in our front yard, Puget Sound, just 20 miles west of Seattle. And so working with Seattle Metro Transit and their advertising agency, Rodney and others from Ground Zero, came up with this wonderful ad that has been on Metro Transit buses since almost the end of June and will run well into the month of August. And this ad is a bright yellow banner that says, 20 miles west of Seattle is the largest concentration of deployed nuclear weapons in the U.S. And just to the left of the yellow banner is a map showing a red dot at Naval Base Kitsap Hangar, the home of the Trident submarines, and also the Strategic Weapons Facility Pacific, where the nuclear weapons are stored. And a nice dotted line almost due west of Seattle, 20 miles away. And the idea of this ad is to generate an awareness among people, because ironically, people, for the most part, in our area are not aware that there are nuclear weapons here, that there is a nuclear submarine base, and they have no knowledge whatsoever. They're shocked when they hear about this. Very small percentage of people that even know about it. So we're trying to create an awareness, and hopefully that will lead to people wanting to know more, to learn more, and to generate a dialogue, a conversation, which we don't have in this country. If you followed what's going on in the United Kingdom, they're having a huge debate about the Trident nuclear weapon system there. They have four Trident submarines, essentially almost the same submarine as ours. It does carry actually the same Trident missile as the U.S. submarines and share some of the same command and control systems. And in the U.K., they're having a massive dialogue and debate in their parliament, for instance. And we have none of that in this country. There is not even a peep. Yes, we're seeing an occasional article here and there about nuclear weapons, but there's no debate about should we build 12 new ballistic missile submarines. The only debate has been in Congress about where are we going to get the money to build them. And that's another issue about Navy shipbuilding and the impact of Trident on that. But the bus ad, we hope, will generate a conversation, just like today. Thank you for your interest in this, because it's so important if we are to make any headway in the work of disarmament and abolishing nuclear weapons. There has to be a conversation. People have to, citizens have to engage in this conversation, because, as you indicated, there is so much money involved in this. There are so many powerful interests, and there's momentum. It's like kinetic energy. Once that ball is rolling downhill, it's a big, heavy one, and it is so hard to stop it. And it takes engagement of the citizenry, an informed citizenry, as we've seen with every issue, to make any headway on nuclear weapons, and bringing pressure there on our elected officials and educating our elected officials, many of whom really don't understand the real impact of nuclear weapons. They just go by the rhetoric of we need to maintain our strategic nuclear deterrent and it's all about national security, but they don't go any deeper than that. They go on what they're told by the lobbyists and the people in the military whose jobs rely on these weapon systems like Trident.
Right. Well, I'm not so sure our elected officials don't know. I mean, they're mostly all older than we are, and they've gone through the Cold War and the nightmare scenario. And, you know, they have that, the Congress has that bunker that they're going to go on in if there's any... if there's any danger. But still, it's just amazing to me. As we're speaking, I have three of my grandchildren here, and it's just so personal. It's like, I'm sure the Congress people have family all over the country that aren't going to be available, you know, their bunkers aren't going to be available for them. And it's just, to me, it's just so monstrous that they even support these weapons of total annihilation.
Yes, you know, I do agree with you that there, in a very real sense, there is no excuse for our elected officials, politicians, members of Congress, not to understand the real risks and understand what nuclear weapons should represent and actually take a different tack. Because, as you said, it's really about future generations. And ironically, yes, that's, I didn't talk about that initially, but one of the principal reasons that I do this work is not just because I have two children and want to see a better future for them in every way, but the future generations, the seven generations, if you will. We owe a debt to future generations to give them a chance. And they have so many challenges, you know, even without nuclear weapons, of climate change and so many other things that they will have to deal with. And if we could at least give them a fighting chance, so to speak. And nuclear weapons are something that, in a certain sense, would be, it would be so simple. If we could get them off the table, if we could eradicate these absurd and insane weapons, then it would change everything, because we owe it to our children and our grandchildren. I see it as a moral and ethical responsibility, because for me, they are, it's totally immoral. And any involvement in producing, developing, and deploying nuclear weapons to me is immoral. And I don't mean to judge the enlisted personnel on those submarines. They make their own choices, but these weapons are an affront to our humanity, and they threaten all of humanity. So we need to bring that to the table. And personally, I hope that with this bus ad that it can lead to, as I said, an increasing conversation, but also to try to be more and more creative in our dialogue and our advertising, the way we present this issue. And I think it's on right now, there's the play called Daisy, and it's about the famous Daisy ad that Lyndon Johnson used. You know, as I understand it, back in that day, using it to defeat Barry Goldwater, it was the ad where there was a young girl. Picking the daisy, and in the background, she was singing a little song, lovely song, and in the background was a countdown. And at the very end, the image of a nuclear mushroom cloud as a bomb detonated. And it was extraordinarily graphic. And it had such an impact. And it was the beginning of, evidently, that negative type of advertising used in political campaigns. But for me, the message there was, it was so impactful. Mm-hmm. It was such a bold and impactful way of reaching people viscerally. And we need to do that. And I don't want to make people fearful. I don't want to use the fear tactics. I don't, like we heard in last night's speech at the Republican convention, I don't believe in that. But I do want people to listen. And I know that we have to get people in a visceral sense, but still respecting them and their ability to rationalize, but get them to the point where they can say, all right, I'm ready to listen, and then get people to understand the real risk of nuclear weapons and then to really speak out. And I believe it will take extraordinary pressure on the political front to make that happen. But again, I believe that people and engaged citizenry can do that. And as you mentioned, just a short aside here, about the 1980s, there was a book called Confronting the Bomb by a historian, Lawrence Wittner, who taught at State University of New York. And in that book, Confronting the Bomb, the central premise was that it hasn't been the elected officials, the presidents and premiers of countries who have kept the world nuclear destruction, but it's been the people, the citizens' movement, that has kept the pressure on at different times, and especially those peaks of nuclear danger, and since in the 80s and at other times. It has been an informed and engaged people's movement that has brought the pressure there on our governments, that has kept the nuclear monster at bay. And I really believe that that's what we need today. And my hope is that with the increasing presence of nuclear weapons in even the mainstream press right now, talking about nuclear weapons in Turkey, NATO weapons, all these different references, that people will start to perk up. They will start to listen and say, okay, what? Why do we have these weapons, and what do we need to do? What will it really take to get them?
Well, Leonard, unfortunately, we're already out of time. It's gone really fast. You've given us such great information and inspiration. But tell my listeners how they can get more information about Ground Zero Center.
Yes, we have a presence on the web, and the best way to find out about Ground Zero is to go to gzcenter.org, and you can find our website, and there will be a link there to our Facebook page, and also to our No to New Trident website and Facebook page, because we're trying to gain momentum to stop this project. So we'd love to have people come and learn more, and for those who are in around Puget Sound to come join us. And I would also mention that there are activities and events around the country, especially this August. And if you go to our website, I'll make sure there's a link where you can learn about events in many other cities in the world in August and through September and October through what's called Chain Reaction 2016, a global set of actions. So
awesome.
I invite everyone to get involved.
Well, this is a good time to end because you're starting to break up. But, Leonard, it was great to personally talk to you again and to finally have you on the soapbox.
Thank you, Cindy. It's really been a pleasure. And it was so wonderful having you at Ground Zero a few years ago. Hope to see you back again.
I had a good time. Well, Leonard Iger, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that's the soapbox for this week. As always, I hope you were informed and inspired, but I also hope you were outraged. Like I said during the interview, this is so personal to me, and it really is infuriating that more people aren't involved in these causes like the anti-nuke cause, because the danger is still there and it's still real. And just because there have been Democrats in power for the last several years, people have become very lazy. They've turned a blind eye to the crimes of the Democratic Party, and it really has to stop if we want peace and if we want justice and if we want any kind of environmental sustainability. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar. I'd like to thank Leonard for being on the show and for his positive attitude all the time. I'd like to thank you for listening to and supporting The Soapbox. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to The Soapbox. Peace out for now.